So we can just sit here casually. No reason to be anxious. No reason to be uncomfortable. No reason to feel like someone's going to get you with a surprise movie.
Welcome to Your Inner Child is an Idiot. This is the podcast where we look back on things from our childhood and see if they were any good to begin with. My name is DJ.
I am Damon.
Let's not draw attention to it. That is the intro. I did it.
Passively. I didn't say anything. Only video viewers would notice I drew attention to it.
Today's episode is a special request from our patron, Little Miss Chicken Nugget. Specifically joined up to have this episode. They feel like we have not covered the Batman oeuvre enough. It has been demanded very politely that we cover Batman and Robin.
Is this our last remaining Burton-esque Batman?
I mean, yeah, of the original, well, the 90s quadrilogy, This is the last one we haven't.
Burton-esque.
Yeah.
Wow. We really ran the gamut and it snuck up on you. And me, do you have any, I assume you saw this in theatres?
This was one, and it came out late enough. What are we talking, 97, I think? So I was old enough definitely at this time to recognize this is universally panned. It's going to be bad.
Mm-hmm. Now, come on. Sometimes the critics get it wrong. Later generations look back on it, you know, as a cult classic and yada, yada, yada.
Well, this is one where there's a lot of movies that I would have said were bad, but this one where I was like, what are we doing, guys? What's happening?
Mm-hmm.
This is the one we've got. Joel Schumacher is directing.
Returning Joel Schumacher from Batman Forever.
Right. Most people can't see that, so don't worry.
I know. That's why I was about to say something, and then I didn't.
And then I called attention to it.
We're doing good.
We got Joel Schumacher returning to direct. We got a new Batman. We got George Clooney.
Mm-hmm. The white smoke appeared above the Vatican, and we got a new Batman.
Yes. And they said, handsomer. Make him handsomer. Every time they do it,
make
they
him
demand.
Handsomer, but give him a dumber haircut so we're not too attracted to him. You want to have a push-me-pull-you type deal going on with any Batman attractiveness.
Give him the Caesar. And we got
a returning Robin.
Yeah, Chris O'Donnell comes back. Chris O'Donnell, is that right?
That's correct.
Okay. We got a new Alicia Silverstone. Friend of the show, Alicia Silverstone.
Friend of the show. Not a friend of vaccines, but friend of the show.
Yeah.
Now, calm down, everyone. I think she's pro-COVID vaccine. This was the cool anti-vax before we really turned on the anti-vax community, as we always should have. I hope I'm not telling tales out of school. I'll just throw in allegedly. My lawyers told me to say allegedly before I research whether she was anti-vax back in the heyday, the pre-COVID heyday.
We'll put a little problematic corner around that one, maybe.
Put some tape around that. I don't want anyone to trip. Before we get to it, we have a returning Michael Goh, everyone's favorite, or possibly Goff. Never actually, after four Batman movies,
Alfred?
I've yet to learn how to pronounce his name.
Michael Goff is back. We got Arnold Schwarzenegger as Mr. Freeze. We got Uma Thurman. And we got somebody playing Bane.
Jason Voorhees. I think it's, what's that guy?
I don't know. Jason Statham.
Jason Statham played Jason Voorhees, played Bane.
Yeah.
In, hold on, Batman and Robin.
See, from Jason X?
Yeah, he's that beefy fella.
Beefy Jason.
And I was wrong on both counts, by the way. Robert Swenson, who is a muscly man, he's a wrestler, but I don't know if he's a professional wrestler, but he is beefy, and he played Bane. Wasn't that worth it? That's fun. When we go on little tangents.
People love that.
I have a distinct memory of going to see this at the cinema.
Okay.
With not friend of the show, but previously referenced Zach. We both enjoyed Batman Forever. We were young. And we went to see this with high anticipation. And about, I feel like
Batman
it was
Robin
a record.
Or Batman Forever.
We liked Batman Forever. So we were excited to see Batman and Robin.
Gotcha.
We got to the theater in early summer, 1997, you said?
97, yeah.
Probably singing Jewel's Foolish Games, which was on the soundtrack inexplicably. And I do want to talk about this soundtrack. What a weird era of soundtracks. But I think it was about within the first 10 minutes of watching it in the theater that we were like, this isn't good. This isn't good movie. And we just started making fun of it, like the rapscallions that we were, the mountebanks.
Little ne'er-do-wells.
Yeah. I think it was just us and a few other people, so I didn't feel so bad. But it is, once, I think the moment that cinched it for me and Zach was when they're trying to stop Mr. Freeze from stealing the jewels that are kept in the museum, and they fall on their backs on the ice rink that he had created in the museum, because that's easier for him. They fell on their backs, and they click their heels together, Dorothy style, and little ice skates came out.
Yeah.
They're prepared for anything. And that's when I realized, like, there's no daylight now between this and the 1960s Batman. This is hot garbage. This is dumb.
I don't think that was an accident. You know, they decided to go full camp, but that was not what I wanted as a viewer. It's not really what I want now either, to be honest. But
I could do with a little camp from the DC universe, if I'm being honest.
Well, good news. We're about to watch this movie.
I just want to try and do this from memory. I know Smashing Pumpkins had a song on the soundtrack. Jewel, previously mentioned, Jewel had a song on the soundtrack. Tell me. Sex Criminal, R. Kelly had a song on the soundtrack. Gotham City, I believe, was the name of the song. I feel like there was just a slew of people who's just like, hey, all y'all get in here. We're doing a soundtrack and we want to get as the four quadrants of people involved.
This is the heyday. This is like, you know, post Bodyguard. They're like, and, you know, Kiss from a Rose was from the last movie. That did really.
Yeah. And that U2 like, song.
On your knees, boy. Remember when he sings that? He's like,
oh. Is that what Bono sings?
Yeah. In mysterious ways.
Gross.
He's talking about praying.
Oh, right.
What are you, gay? Because
he's like super Catholic or something.
What are you, gay? Bono. What else could he be
First
talking
off, about? Yes, I am gay. I feel like it's probably about time I mentioned it.
Wow, you heard it here first, everyone.
And many other times before
I told you to do it in your own time, and I hope you feel like you did.
You know, I wanted to get to the point where it couldn't be weaponized against me by my parents, and I think I finally got to that point.
This is what made me mad as a little comic book nerd. This was not super long after, in the comic books, Bane appeared as a character for the first time. And
oh, really?
Had this. Yeah. I mean, I think that would have been early 90s. So I don't know. We'll have to look up publication history, but it was like.
We'll have to. There's no way around it. We're just going to have to.
We're going to have to.
Bernard, open up the archives. Just, I want to make sure we are already ready to do that. I'll grab a candle.
I do have to point out, we are currently doing a listener survey. Please fill it out. It'll be in the, we'll talk about it in a second in the commercial, but someone did put on things that we could improve, like just have the Wikipedia page open.
What I liked about that comment is that the Excel spreadsheet shrunk the bar. So all I saw at first was, could you guys do a little, and that's all I saw. And let me tell you, me opening that Excel spreadsheet, I went through the seven stages of guilt. I was like, what is it? What do you want me to do?
And it was like, could you do the barest minimum of research? And I don't know. I'm not going to promise anything.
We tell you the year. Within 2 years, we give you the year that this movie was released. What do you want from us?
Sometimes
we get the director in there.
We may guess wrong several times first, but eventually we'll get the year right.
Before I concede and Google live on air.
So sometime in the mid-90s, like 94, 95, I think is when that whole run in the comic book happened. So Bane kind of appears, and I don't know if this is like his first appearance. I don't know. He might have made an appearance earlier, but like the first time he's like a legit character, he appears and he has this very elaborate scheme where he like lets all the villains out of Arkham Asylum, breaks them out. And so Batman spends like weeks or however long it is, like fighting like his arch enemies from years past, and he's basically beaten and defeated, and he like finally defeats all of them. He comes home and like to Wayne Manor, and Bane is waiting for him, and then he kicks the shit out of him and breaks his back because he doesn't want Batman dead. He wants to humiliate him. He wants him broken, and that's fucking cool. Like, and they kind of like got a little better with that with the third Nolan movie. But in this one, they introduce Bane and he just says like his name and bomb. And so as a little nerd who couldn't accept that they didn't do things the way I wanted. I was like, no, that's not how it is.
They're not respecting the canon is what you screamed in a 1997 Regal cinema.
Yeah, that was their first fucking mistake. But I think,
like you mentioned, sure there won't be any others.
Like you mentioned, though, that I think by the time that happened in the movie, we already knew what we were in for, and it wasn't going to be a canon-appropriate Bane.
Right. That's the least of our worries. Yeah. I would take a very Looney Tunes-style sidekick villain Bane if that was the only error here.
Well, we're going to watch Batman and Robin 1997. Watch with us. We'll be back after this. I feel like there's something we can do with our Patreon commercial that has to do with how toyetic this movie is. Like, become a patron of the show and get Damon with real life faffing action.
He's all
faff. He's a bit faff. He's faffing about like a milkshake that turns into a podcast microphone.
A milkshake?
This is like a Happy Meal toy.
That's not a toy. That's not
actually. I'm
toy.
Thinking of what I'm. I think I realized what I'm thinking of is my most favorite Happy Meal toy of all time, which were the little Transformers, like the milkshake turned into like a character.
Yes, I had. I might have had the milkshake, or I might have had. Was there a Fry Man, and his arms sort of came up?
I think so.
Like
yeah.
This, and then he
yeah.
came out like guns, but they were just fries.
Just fries.
At the end of them. At the end, it was just fries. I'd be happy to be at the end of that gun. Tell you that.
We don't have anything like that for our patrons, but. We could, if you really want it, patreon.com/yourinnerchildsanidiot.
You know what I like about our Patreon commercials? I don't know I'm in them until you start wrapping them up. I thought we were just brainstorming, and then all of a sudden you're like, anyway, that's what you can get. That's what I like.
You think that eventually we're going to, 200
these?
Years in, we're going to come across something?
200 years?
I didn't say years. I meant episodes, but it feels like years sometimes.
patreon.com/yourinnerchildisanidiot or just yourinnerchildisanidiot.com, which is easier to say, and I don't know why we don't lead with that.
Well,
but
it actually goes to our pod page, from which you could go to our Patreon page.
Oh,
I think
the click through rate, that's what you're concerned about.
I'm always concerned about that CTR, the YICIAICTR
big
is
time
my big concern.
If I was an email marketing blast, I would be hitting unsubscribe right about now.
Hi, this is Jonathan Day, longtime listener, first-time caller. I just had a call after I listened to the Batman Returns episode because I also had the Emperor Penguin toy when I was a kid. I remember loving them because they had like a rocket-powered like backpack thing and everything. I don't think they came with anything. I think they were just like you got like two or three Emperor Penguins like in a pack, and they just had like rocket powers. I remember liking them because I did a report in like first grade on like Emperor Penguins, and I thought they were really cool. And if you give them like rocket power, they're even more amazing. Also, this brought back some other memories for me. Like, I remember getting in a big argument with my siblings about whether bastard is a swear word, because I remember Catwoman swear, like, yelling at a Batman as, like, she drives away in a dump truck. So thoughts on that. And then also, I think you guys should review the 1960s Batman movie. I think it's the best one, just because some of the lines, like, you know, some days you just can't get rid of a bomb. But I definitely think you guys should do that at some point as well. Anyway, that's it. Thanks again. Bye.
I'm hoping by the end of this, that we'll learn to trust each other as partners.
Just like we did last time we did a Batman movie, where we learned to trust each other as partners, but then also as a trio, perhaps.
And then we'll like shake bat gloves like this.
And then I'm hoping that you have a really large light with two D's on it, because our names start with D.
Right.
And then we can just sort of run in front
and
of
our
it.
Little bat ears are wobbling.
And he did that in the last movie. I'm like, this isn't a trope you need to continue.
Yeah, that was a bad idea last time. Let's not do that again. There's three of you now. It's even harder to fit you into frame. It's weird.
And when you get Crypto Dog or whatever, when he joins the squad, you're just going to be a big black blob coming towards me. It's indecipherable.
Let's see. Is it my charge to recap this movie? I'll take it. I didn't prepare for this.
Neither did the movie for you.
Yeah, well, I'll just wing it like they clearly did.
This movie is all improvised, just like Waiting for Guffman, the entire
whole
movie.
Thing.
They wung it.
It's entirely wung. Yada, yada, yada. Finally, Coolio appears. In Act Two, an
Coolio's
hour into the movie.
Life, the rest is just details.
That's right. We got Batman and Robin. Don't worry about why Batman looks different, but he does.
Mm-hmm.
Just picking up their adventures from last time, there's a new villain in town, Mr. Freeze, played by Arnold Schwarzenegger, and he is terrorizing Gotham. He's stealing diamonds to power
Seth. And his last name is Freeze, and it doesn't have anything to do with the way he terrorizes? Just a coincidence?
No, his last name is Freeze.
Yeah.
He becomes Mr. Freeze. Easy.
Pretty sweet coincidence. I mean, tragic what happened, but pretty sweet coincidence.
He uses ice powers to get ice. He's looking for diamonds to power something. And he's got a good reason, though. He has his cryogenically frozen. She's not really frozen. She's kind of suspended in water or something.
In a wading pool, yeah.
She has McGregor's syndrome, which we all know is uncurable. And so he is working on a cure for her, keeping her frozen. So he's got a good cause, really.
Mm-hmm.
But he's doing it villainously. And he eventually teams up with another villain, Poison Ivy, who gets her powers by being pushed into chemicals.
And she has the same aims as Mr. Freeze, so it's understandable why they would pair up?
Absolutely not. She wants the world to be taken over by plants. She wants mammals gone. And I guess she has enough plant DNA now that does not include her. And so, naturally, those two team up, along with everyone's favorite villain, Bane, who is a Frankenstein-style lab experiment by the Mad Doctor, who also... Don't worry about it. He's there. He's strong.
You're doing great.
He's stupid.
Yeah.
Eventually, we also get an appearance from Alfred's niece, played by Alicia Silverstone, immediately figures out, hacks into Alfred's secret computer using the 3-letter password.
Not even a character or a number in there. Not even an exclamation point, just because your boss insists there has to be a special character in there.
There was one capital letter, though, I think, so.
You got to hand it to her. No one could figure that out.
She figures out the Bat secrets, immediately becomes Batgirl. The three heroes eventually defeat the villains and save the day. They even get a little retribution for Mr. Freeze, because it turns out that Alfred has also come down with McGregor syndrome.
Mm-hmm,
but he's in phase one, which Mr. Freeze has already found a cure for. So
didn't tell anyone. Just finding cures for various stages of diseases.
He did label it nicely, where it was like phase one, cured. Still working on phase 2, 3, 4, and 5.
I don't want to put an incomplete product out there. I want all stages handled.
So we do get, Alfred has fallen very ill, but he ends up recovering thanks to the innovations of Mr. Freeze.
Within a day, just a heavy sleep and 2 capsules sort of take out McGregor syndrome, a heretofore uncurable, life-threatening disease.
I'm not sure that was just a day. There were several pizza boxes strewn throughout Wayne Manor.
True. Just the 2 capsules, though. I don't have to, like, come in again and put more capsules in.
He did say, call me in the morning, so I guess there could have been more capsules. And then we get, as everybody's like just kind of waiting for the whole movie, we get the 3 bat heroes running in front of the light towards the camera. It's probably not the actors, it's probably doubles, actually.
Absolutely. George Clooney's not coming in for that. He's got a film ER in the morning.
Can't see his face. And that was a stupid recap, but to be fair, it's a stupid movie.
Now, I don't typically do this, but I do want to correct you on one aspect of your recap.
Okay.
You seem to have some confusion over why Mr. Freeze would need to collect diamonds in order to power his freezing suit. And, well, let me see. I have it here. His suit uses diamond-enhanced lasers to keep him at 0 degrees.
0 degrees.
So the lasers, I guess, shoot into the diamond, which enhances them further. Now, you're probably saying, isn't a laser already a concentrated beam of light? Yes. And then the diamond, I assume, comes in and concentrates it even more so. Now, you're probably saying, how does that make something cold when you're shooting a very concentrated beam of light at something? We're not scientists. But he needs the diamonds of varying size, and he just sort of puts them in. Apparently, the diamonds run out of this ability. You can cash a diamond in this way. Everybody so he knows had to keep statement. Getting more and more, more and more diamonds to put in his suit, to run it like an arcade cabinet where you have to just keep putting diamonds in it to make it run.
Like diamonds famous for making light. I guess I'm thinking of a prism, but isn't a diamond a type of prism?
Yeah, I mean, I think if it's cut properly, you also don't have to get, I mean, you don't have to get the best diamonds in the world. They have like industrial grade diamonds that they use to cut things.
Yeah.
That are just fucking brown ass diamonds that you can, you know, put in your shitty ass suit.
But you can't grab that, look at it, and say, ice to see you. So.
That's true. It doesn't give you a lot of puns. You can't do the ice pun like rappers would do. You know, you can't play with that a lot. Yeah.
Really disappointed. You've raised some ice puns in this.
You're disappointed? You thought there wasn't enough ice puns?
It's not the frequency or the total amount that I'm disappointed in, but just the sort of cleverness. Because I
varying degrees, I would say it's a mixed bag.
Yeah. Sorry. My condition has left me cold.
Cool.
And it's like, what? I mean, you had a lot of words leading up to the pun. I feel like we could have come up with something a little. Let's workshop this. Let's spitball it. That's, you know, no bad ideas. Let's start with that.
With a pun, it's good to keep it tight.
Yeah. Get to the wordplay. I'm not here for the.
Like, I get busting into a gala and saying, hey, everybody, chill. Perfect. No notes.
That's pretty perfect. Good. That's pretty good.
Ice to see you. That feels like hour two of the brainstorming session. Like, hey, you know, if we need it, we've got it, but we don't have to go with it.
You know, I'm going to put ice to see you in. Like, it's pretty solid. Like, it's not an A+.
Now, here's where I got upset.
It's short, though. I like that.
What killed the dinosaurs, : the ice age, factually untrue.
That's not true. I mean, we don't know for sure. But we do know.
There were millions of years between the two.
Yeah, I mean, we know for sure it wasn't that. We don't know for sure, like, what it was.
It's one of the few suspects we've ruled out in terms of what killed the dinosaurs.
In 1997, though, we didn't know that yet.
You know, science was fuzzy at best. When he does that, though, he shoots his ice beam gun at
diamond-powered ice beam gun.
At a giant, they're in a museum. Possibly a natural history museum, but it seems like it's all over the place. And he shoots it at this giant dinosaur, kind of like what the New York History Museum has. Yeah. He shoots it, and it breaks in just such a way that it falls. How would he guarantee that that would have done anything if that dinosaur got cold?
You know, and we're talking about crazy sub-zero temperatures, so I'm sure it would make things behave in a weird way. But it's weird that you, like, hit some things and it freezes them in place, but other things it just, like, immediately crumbles. Like, I would understand, like, the structural integrity is compromised by the sub-zero temperatures, but it's like, it's not even, like, done freezing and it starts, like, crumbling to the ground.
Is it, like, liquid nitrogen, or is it, like, you know, freezing something in water? Which is it?
Yeah. That was my main issue with this, this movie.
Can you imagine? My thing reads like a serial killer's notebook. I don't have even sometimes complete thoughts. I just say, credits is my first note.
Speaking of serial killer notes, there's one super close-up shot of George Clooney. His skin is looking so good in that one shot, especially. He's a handsome man.
He is a handsome man. I mean,
terrible
I feel
in this movie.
He's absolutely, I've never seen him worse than in this movie. He's absolutely, I never watched ER, so I can't speak to that, but he is abjectly terrible in this movie.
Yes, I wouldn't say that I'm like I am generally a Clooney fan. I mean, as much as I'm a fan of any actor, like I like stuff, seems like, you know, he's a bit of a playboy, but nothing that untoward has come out yet, knocking on wood, as far as like his personality, like maybe he's not the best to date.
If you want to get married, he's not the best to date. Unless you're, you know, what's her name?
Doctor,
I don't know her name. Yeah.
Dr. Amal.
Amal Clooney, of course. So you're saying you prefer in the ranking of Clooney's Rosemary and then possibly George. Or would you put Amal over George? Probably in terms of saving the world, I'd put Amal over George.
Amal, I'm going to have to put, just for humanity's sake, I'm going to put Amal first, then George, then Rosemary. And that's only through, I don't have a lot of experience with Rosemary. I hear her baby was creepy. Was it George? Is that his mom?
No. Can you imagine his origin story? And those are the eyes of Satan? I'll take Satan any day of the week.
Satan any day.
George.
But he is terrible. Now, it might just be, maybe he didn't, he clashed with Joel Schumacher. This script is bad. He is also, I mean, I feel like Batman is an afterthought in this movie. Like he, yeah. I mean, there are scenes where George Clooney is just sort of nodding through the scene. Like he doesn't even have a line. He's just sort of nodding at everyone in the scene or turning his head while listening to a story by Barbara or, you know, sort of nodding at Chris O'Donnell while Alfred says something. It's like they're like, well, legally he has to be in the movie, but otherwise we're just going to be focusing on everyone else.
I don't know what happened.
Like, even Robin has more to do, I feel like, in this movie than George does.
There's at one point, he does this weird thing. He does it a couple times in this movie. There's only one that I'm currently remembering. That's what I was trying to remember. But at the end of the movie, he has some weird phrasings of how he says lines. Not mm-hmm. just the cold delivery, which is kind of throughout. But then there's a moment at the end where he's talking to Robin. And he's like, and we're going to have to learn to trust each other. Like, he's going to say more, but he just like...
They were trying to figure out how to get another toy out of this line. Like, can we have sensible come to earth moment, Clooney? Can that be an action figure? Is that fun? You know, he has the tuxedo with the ties untied. That's fun. Kids love that.
Cool.
Or maybe like if you dip him in water, the tie reties itself. That's kind of fun. Post-gala Bruce Wayne.
I would have bought that toy. That's great. Just like, we're going to need to learn how to trust each other. Zbatarangs.
Is that the one where he's like, partner, friend? He sort of twitches a little bit? Partner, friend.
No, will you help? It was like in the denouement, like when they're after Alfred's like recovered.
Oh.
It's like, we're going to have to learn how to trust each other. You want to do another take, George?
That's not his call. That's Joel Schumacher, the late Joel Schumacher's call.
Speaking of Joel Schumacher, rest in peace. God rest his soul. He apparently, before nearly every take, yelled to everyone, "Is this a cartoon, everyone? Remember." To which I think it was, I read something about like Chris O'Donnell said this, or no, it was Robert Glover said like that he.
John Glover.
Donald Glover. Danny Glover.
All the Glovers, they came together.
John Glover said, "That didn't make me feel great about the movie."
I will say, I mean, you know, Joel Schumacher, I mean, he had to apologize for this movie for the rest of his life.
Lord keep him. Lord rest him and keep him.
And I'm going to give him some praise right now. He was an out gay director, you know, starting in the late 80s, I think.
Yeah.
And
just him and John Waters. That was it.
That was it. Whose movies do I prefer? I don't want to get into it. I'm trying to see what his first movie was. Oh, The Lost Boys.
Well, yeah, we got to watch that one.
But I know he also did Flatliners, which my brother really liked. So I just want to give him his props in that regard. That is an accomplishment. Now, going into this movie, because this was a patron request.
Yes. Little Miss Chicken.
I was kind of thinking that, because we'd already watched Batman Forever. I can't remember what our verdicts were on that. I kind of was thinking like, okay, we've elected several Batmen since then. And we've gone through several Batman administrations after this. We've had a whole trilogy and, I don't know, some remnants of another bit that, you know, Zack Snyder was working on. I felt like, okay, well, maybe now having these other movies under our belt, I can go back to this movie and realize it's not the end of the world and sort of respect it for what it is, like maybe appreciate the kitschiness and the camp. I went in with an open mind like this might be fun. This isn't a fun movie. This isn't that. And I am forgiving towards a lot of stuff. And there are moments where it feels like, okay, this is very much in the vein of the 1966,
yeah,
you know, Adam West Batman show and movie. But this movie is nearly indecipherable. The acting is terrible. The script is incoherent. It feels like everyone is in a different movie than everyone else. Like, yeah. Uma Thurman is vamping like a drag queen over here.
Yes.
Arnold Schwarzenegger's trying his damnedest to sort of get these lines out. George Clooney thinks this is his masterwork, it feels like, even though he's been given nothing to do. And it just is all over the place.
Lauren pointed out that, and I think I agree with this now that we're talking about that, Arnold Schwarzenegger, who was really the only one that was like, hit the nail on the head as far as what movie he was in. Or like it was kind of more built around him because he went...
He doesn't have a big range.
Yeah, he's got a certain range.
Right.
And he played the range and he looked the way he did in the ridiculous costume. And that's
what the movie was.
Where he's like dressed as a linebacker, like a Dayglow linebacker. Let's take this man who is notoriously huge and even make him huger by put him in this like football shaped, not football shaped, but football uniform shaped outfit that glows. And paint is, I do like that his entire skin is silver, like silver flecked with, and his eyes are kind of like unsettling when you actually get up close to them. They don't have pupils. They are just like blue mirror look to them.
He's got like LEDs like in his mouth.
Yeah, at that point, it was like when you have one of those like mouth, those teeth whiteners that people sometimes use. I'm like, don't do that. Tyler, even when we were watching, he's like, has his mouth been blue this whole time? And I was like, no, I think it's just for this scene suddenly. His maybe costume. Maybe his mouth is blue when he's charged up, when he's got enough diamonds in the chassis that he can his mouth turns blue. I will say, yeah, I think that Arnold Schwarzenegger, I knew what I was getting, so he's not going to be playing a Southern sheriff or something. But Uma Thurman, I feel like she had an idea of what she wanted to do. I don't know if she necessarily got it. I appreciated what she wanted to do, but not what she did.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? I feel like she was really overplaying it. She sort of, once she gets her powers, she turns into this like very vampy, va-va-va-voom, almost like a Mae West thing. What'd you say? Yeah.
She's like a monologue machine too. She's like talking to, there's no one in this
room. She's constantly just like turning to herself. And then when she's a mousy nerd at the beginning, she is constantly like pointing. She's pointing her finger indignantly up towards the heavens. But I don't know. Something just didn't gel with me. It always felt like she wasn't clicking. Even with what she wanted to do, it wasn't vibing with me.
I can't. And maybe you can put like the point on this that I can't. But there's something about, because I was thinking about that, coming to this more with the attitude of the 60s television show, where you're like, this is campy, this is silly, but because the production value is so much higher, this is such a more like expensive movie.
Yeah.
And I think even one of the reviews that I read clips of was talking about this, like, it doesn't work to like have that sort of campiness and then this like huge action set piece and then be like, because like as soon as word go, we're like in an action scene immediately.
Yeah.
Well first we see their bat butts in the bat suits
and nipples.
And that's
like, that's my second note, nipples and butts, point.
I remember laughing at that in the theater. So like, that's a funny joke. Because of the movie that it is, you kind of, in retrospect, go like, oh, geez. But in the moment, you're like, oh, that's kind of silly and fun.
Mm-hmm.
But then immediately they go to an action scene. First, like, Batman and Robin are bickering. Like, I thought we were buds. I thought we resolved this.
Yeah,
and
we already spent an hour and a half doing this, you know, just merely 2 years ago.
And then we get to the first scene where they're fighting Mr. Freeze, and it's immediately campy. They're like jumping in like Power Rangers ways. Like they're like on a string, like where they're like
not even trying to hide the string, just like have them jump at a straight angle and then sort of glide up a little bit for some reason.
Freeze like gets his big freeze ray like knocked out of his hands, and it like floats in the weirdest way and like barely sits on the top. I'm like, what is happening?
Yeah, it sits on top of a statue's like the ridge of its forehead. Like there's no reason it could sit there, and it's just so precariously. They don't even try to have it wobble. It just sort of boop. Almost like the film is reversed, like it was in a stationary point and then knocked off. It is that first scene, I think I said in the intro, like that was the minute the ice skates came out of the boots. I was like, me and Zach were like, well, we're just going to laugh the entire time. We're going to make fun of this movie the entire way. And in fact, the line, take two of these, I whispered to Zach, and call me in the morning. And then he said it. And I was like, this movie is terrible.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's so much car stuff. I did also go into this thinking about the line, you know, Schumacher, in his apologies about this movie, is like, the execs told me they wanted this movie to be toyetic, a word we've used on this podcast before. But I kept thinking of that, meaning that they wanted as many toys to come out of this as possible, which explains why there's just, this movie is cram jam full of characters that have no reason to be there. Everyone gets their own car. Mm-hmm. I remember when Batman Returns came out, the Happy Meals had cars. And I remember being offended. There was a Catwoman car. She was like in a little purple car with a big cat face in the front. And I was like, she doesn't have a car in the movie. That wouldn't have been a problem with Batman and Robin. Mr. Freeze has a car. Poison Ivy has this cool like purple, like maroon limousine. Of course, Batman has several cars. He has his car. He has an ice skating car. Robin has his own cool ass motorcycle. I don't know why he's bitching about Batman having a car when he also has a cool ass motorcycle that comes out of the goddamn floor.
Yes.
And then Batgirl eventually, she's just got a costume and a car.
He's got his own logo. Sorry, I want to go back to this. He's got his own logo. Like
Robin, you mean?
Robin? Yeah.
Tyler was laughing about that. I'm like, Tyler, at one point, Robin wants his logo in the sky. And Tyler's like, what would his logo look like? And I was like, well, if you wait around, you're going to see, because he has a logo and it's emblazoned across his chest.
And it was like, first of all, Robin, you're not paying for any of this.
Yeah.
You want a car? Go buy a car. You want to go buy a Robin?
I worked hard by having my dad be an important guy who got shot.
I got this money the old-fashioned way, the way the American dream was meant to be.
By inheriting it from my parents and grandparents.
And I inherited it hard.
The sweat off my brow fell on the stacks of money I inherited from my dead dad.
Pull up on your inherited bootstraps.
These are actually my grandfather's bootstraps, and I had them attached to these boots. Mr. Freeze has not only this giant, ugly turd of a car with spikes on the front.
I had that car. I'm pretty sure I had.
You had that?
I think I had a version. I don't remember if it was like a McDonald's one or if it was like a legit.
How old were you when this movie came out? You would have been like 15.
Maybe my cousin had it? Because now I'm realizing that.
Backtracking now.
I wouldn't. Well, I was like, by this point I was playing, like, it's not that I was too cool. I was just like into buying musical stuff. And like, I would have bought
You had a Mr. Freeze car shaped guitar.
Yeah. What about a cool black light poster?
Yeah. Rock and roll. Give me another lava lamp, Ma.
Who had that then? Now I'm like really.
It kind of looks like a VW bus, but with spikes on it.
Yeah. And that would shoot.
Yeah.
Shoot out.
Maybe. And then there's also like a big phallus that comes out and shoots a ice beam at that. I assume the car probably has to have its own diamonds. No wonder Mr. Freeze is in such a pickle. You're not being conservative enough with the diamonds. Also, that same vehicle has a rocket in it for literally no reason that it shoots into space with Batman in it. Robin has to save him. Then they come down after it explodes. They come down on its doors that have turned into surfboards. And they're just sort of moving through space. It doesn't feel like they're plummeting towards the Earth because they're real cash about it. Mr. Freeze, of course, has butterfly wings that comes out of his suit. I'm sure that's a separate toy. It does not come in the standard Mr. Freeze toy. You're going to have to buy that separate.
Each different toy sold separate.
They have so many costume changes in this. I did appreciate that they fought Poison Ivy in the climax. They fought her and then apparently went home to change into their Mr. Freeze themed outfits with the silver emblazoned.
Well, that was probably necessary because they're going to be in sub-zero temperatures.
Yes. And who else gets stuck? Well, of course, you have Bane, you have Poison Ivy, you got Mr. Freeze, you got all Mr. Freeze's henchmen. You probably can get a doll of Vivica A. Fox's character who's just there.
Yeah.
I was very confused by her because she's one of Mr. Freeze's henchmen. She doesn't go on missions with his other henchmen from what I could see. But then she's like, hey, why don't you and I go to Fucktown, Mr. Freeze? And he's like, no, my penis is cold and does not feel the heat of the woman touch or whatever he says. More punnily, of course. And then I'm like, well, what does she do? Is she just like the house mother of your hideout? Like, does she just like clean up the dishes? What is the, why is she here?
She actually runs the entire computing program, so thanks a lot.
You're right. Why did I focus on dishes? Maybe she's the accountant of the whole Mr. Freeze operation. What's wrong with me?
Really presumptive of you, even though she does proposition him. Like the only time she has in
a scene. She's dressed like a harlot the entire time.
Wow. Okay. Yeah.
You're right.
How do you want her to dress?
How
do you want her to dress?
She can dress however she wants. A harlot as well. I inherited this sexism from my grandfather.
Jesus. So, Alicia Silverstone, while we're being misogynist.
Yeah, let's talk about that camera pan up her entire body.
Yeah, so incredibly charming and clueless.
She is.
Great job. So,
she's good in the Babysitter's Club reboot.
Yes. She has the ability to exude some amount of charm on screen. Did not choose to or was not allowed to use it in this film.
Don't waste your time. She said, I'm not going to waste my charm reserves on this. Thank you very much.
She reads every line like she's reading it off a stone tablet she found somewhere. Like, it's very strange.
Yes, her character is very much, well, she's infantilized. The minute we see her, she's in a schoolgirl outfit, which made me uncomfortable. And she's also, she knocks on Wayne Manor's front door, and then no one immediately answers the door. So she starts climbing sort of up the side. And I guess there's a window over the transom of the door, but she doesn't try and reach it. She just sort of gets up higher up so that when Chris O'Donnell opens the door, she's at perfect leering height for the camera. And I was like, Joel Schumacher, this is why we hire a fucking gay director, so I don't have to deal with this shit. And you're still panning up her legs. Now, you did have several scenes of George Clooney's butt and Chris O'Donnell's butt in rubber suits, so maybe it's a, I'll take the mulligan on that one. But it still was very kind of leery. But yeah, she kind of talks in this sort of almost like childlike, my Uncle Alfred.
Well, that does seem like it's kind of a put on for Alfred, because
maybe that's it.
Because then she like goes and steals the motorcycle, which is like,
then she's a badass.
Is that her plan? What was her plan?
I don't know what that had to do with anything aside from, no doubt, getting her on a motorcycle so we can sell a motorcycle, like casual Friday Batgirl on motorcycle.
I do think there was some attempt made to show that she had these skills before they put her in the Bat costume very quickly at the
right,
end of the,
maybe, yeah.
And so I wonder if that was just a thing they either had in the script or put in later, because they were like, how in the fuck? Because she's just all of a sudden kicking and jumping and doing stuff, which it still doesn't really make sense. But at least they were like, they showed her that she can, like, she flips Robin over when he catches her in the garage. Yeah. She's got the motorcycle skills. She's like kind of got this rebellious thing. She like escapes out of the window and all this stuff.
She's trying to collect money to get Uncle Alfred out of servitude, not realizing he actually loves being a servant.
You know, a lot of servants that live their entire lives for one family, you know, they learn a lot of skills.
Mm-hmm. Ron DeSantis, what are you doing here? I went to a lot of plantations, being a person who grew up in the South. So I went to a lot of plantations on field trips. And lo and behold, every plantation I went to, they actually treated the slaves quite well here. Oh, weird. This is another anomaly plantation.
Did
you mean they let them free? Oh, No, in a different, more granular way, we treated them well, I guess.
Alfred is free to leave whenever he wants to be destitute.
He won't have a job anymore, and of course he wouldn't have a home, but, you know, he can leave whenever he wants. She wants to raise money for that because she knows he's sick, but no one else picked up that he's constantly leaning against suits of armor and just sort of coughing into a white handkerchief.
Batman does figure it out, but like, an hour and a half into the movie, and then he's like, I can tell. And I'm like, where have you been,
Bruce? Yeah, didn't you see him in the first scene, you know, withering under the weight of his conscience and McGregor syndrome? Oh, my God. Yeah, things just sort of happen in this movie. He does that. He does admit, oh, yeah, I knew about the McGregor syndrome. I was standing over here the whole time while you were talking to this girl. She appears at the house, and there doesn't seem to be any explanation of what she's doing. Is she traveling? And then she's like, oh, I can stay here? I'm like, what's your plan if you're not staying here? You came to see Uncle Alfred, but you don't want to actually, you didn't tell him you were coming, but you also don't want to stay at the house. You're just sort of here to be here. And then apparently win drag races, which also feels like, wasn't that exactly what happened in Batman Forever? That's what Robin did. He also stole the car to go drag racing around.
Yeah. I don't know if he went drag racing so much as he like took the car like on a joyride and then like confronted a bunch of baddies.
Hooligans. Dayglow hooligans.
One more thing on Alicia. Well, a couple more things on Alicia.
Please.
For one thing, I want to just put out there, and like, apparently there was some thing that happened where like she had to switch some of the filming because she had outgrown the costume, or like the costume didn't fit anymore. That was like what people said, which I think is bullshit. It's bullshit if it happened, and it's bullshit because they make these costumes like for the actors.
Mm-hmm.
They could probably redo it. You know what I mean? Like if that were the case, but apparently
supposed to be more stuff with her in costume.
Yeah. And it got leaked that that's what happened. And then she was being like fat shamed, mm-hmm. and then like really kind of came out in the press against that, obviously. And then Schumacher was like defending her. I didn't read too many of the actual articles because it's garbage, and mm-hmm. I don't really want to even put my eyes on it, but
the 90s were a great time for everyone who wasn't put that in the context, straight white male.
As we're kind of picking on her a little bit, I also think like it's not, I definitely don't think.
Are you insinuating that comic book fans treated a woman poorly?
I'm just saying it's about ethics in Batman movies. That's what I'm saying. She's also, just to go back to being an asshole, I think she's like lit. Really
what a bitch.
Weird. She's like,
she what?
Lit. She's lit really weird in this movie. And it's not her fault.
How she was lit.
It's just like every time that they show her face, it's like some, it's kind of weird, which is true of.
No,
everyone,
tell me how weird her face is. Go on.
It's not her face. I'm saying she was not.
Well, how is she lit weird? What do you mean?
There's like weird shadow, or maybe it's like a makeup thing. There's like a weird like shadow across her face.
Ooh, like. I did notice there was when she got back from drag racing.
Well, yeah, the smudge.
She had smudges all over, but because of the way the helmet was built, it just looked like they had sort of put like stubble on her face. They made it look like she had like a 5 o'clock shadow. It was very, I was like, what is that? What? Just put more smudges on her face.
Just to get away from at least.
The one time they're realistic, like, well, the smudges would only be on her chin and the sides of her face, so I'm not putting it on her forehead. Oh, I do want to address one thing more about Alicia Silverstone. Actually, several things. Even though she's not that integral to the story, she's just sort of all of a sudden there. In fact, I keep forgetting while I was watching the movie that she's in the movie because she just all of a sudden appears. She's not really connected to the main story until like the very end. And she's like, you guys need me. And I'm like, why? Why do we? Are these villains more troublesome than the Joker and the Penguin? Is that these causing more problems? They've already caught one at least once, but she goes on this drag race, and I guess she had already annoyed all the other drag racers while they were drag racing earlier. Coolio seemed chill with her, but all the other drag racers, such as the One-Eyed Mozarts, the Clockwork Oranges, they were all annoyed with her because they tried to sabotage her win. Now, I had trouble following this because what happens is that they go through a factory. There's all these like sparks flying. It's very Mario Kart. Like no one would host a race here. And they went down a rainbow road. There were no barriers on the side. You could just fall into space.
It's dangerous.
As long as Lakito's there to pull you back on the road, it's fine.
Probably going to lose a place or two.
Yeah. Oh, depending on the Mario Kart, you could be down to 10th place. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. But at some point, all the racers are going down this bridge. One of the racers has his cronies at the end of the bridge, and they throw fire on the road, and it throws all the other racers. Ah! And then they start skidding, and then you find out that the bridge is incomplete, which seems like you probably didn't even have to bring your cronies in because the bridge isn't complete. And you would have killed everyone in the race. And possibly yourself, and probably everything will be disqualified because like 10 people just died. So I don't feel like we're going to give you the prize money, dude. Also, did you trick everyone to go down this bridge? Did you like have all your friends like switch the signs, like turn the arrows the other way, like in a cartoon, like in those wacky racers from Hanna-Barbera?
They drew a tunnel on the wall and...
Is Dastardly and Muttley in this race? Is that what's causing the problem? So I wanted to say that because I was very confused. It just seemed like a lot of work. Work smarter, not harder, other racer, evil racer. The other thing I liked about Alicia Silverstone is that I've got a strong nostalgic vibe to 90s feminism, which is, yes, I am dressed as a Catholic schoolgirl, but I'm really good at computers and stuff. So this means it's progressive.
Yeah. You're giving feminism a bad name.
Even though my tits are outlined in the rubber suit so that you know exactly where they are, because that's very important, so that you know exactly where my mammary glands are located on my body, because that's one of the most important parts of my outfit.
It's rough.
And my uncle made this outfit for me, so that's not weird at all.
Oh, that is... He had very specific measurements.
Oh, yes. I think I'll put something for her tits right here.
Let's get away from Alicia Silverstone and talk about Chris O'Donnell for a second, because also bad.
I feel like, I mean, I see that I didn't mind those two. They felt like expendable. Chris O'Donnell and Alicia Silverstone. I was like, whatever. they're 5 out of 10 for me. Like, they're not doing great. They're not doing terrible. They're saying their lines. They sound like human beings saying the lines they have been handed. I wasn't bothered by either of them. I was surprised that they get such a big chunk of this movie and, like, George Clooney's, like, having a Mai Tai somewhere.
Yeah. I mean, guy knows how to invest his time, you know?
True. He works hard. He plays hard. You know what I mean? He's probably playing street ball somewhere with a bunch of Day Glow hooligans.
I did like John Glover as the mad scientist. That was...
There's a person who knows what movie he's in because someone told him, you are in a cartoon.
You're in a cartoon.
Act like was, that.
And he was mad about it, but then he did it.
Right, he's like, I don't like this, but I'll do it.
He's playing Dr. Wily from Mega Man, and he's full mad scientist.
Yeah, including the full-on like electrocuted hair, like Yahoo Serious style.
And when Poison Ivy turns, or when she turns into, Dr. Isley turns into Poison Ivy, and she's come back up, and she's like, being kind of lascivious and saying, I want to kiss. And he goes up, he's like kneeling up to her to kiss, and he's doing this, like pursing his lips. And then she's like, oh yeah, I'm Poison. I just love that now I'm back to Poison Ivy. She just like knows. She's like, my blood is aloe now. I'm like, how do you know this? Like,
yeah, the thing about this movie is you just want to declare what's happening so that you don't have to explain it. And that's the first rule of script writing is tell, tell, tell.
Never ever show.
Her actually, blood is aloe, which seems like a bad system because it's so thick. And her, what was it? Her eyes are chlorophyll or her skin is chlorophyll, which I was like, the one thing I know about chlorophyll tells me your skin is not chlorophyll. And then her lips are poison, which we all know, we all associate poison with plants. And like I said, I mean, I like what she wanted to do more than what she actually did. There is a drag performance in here somewhere. Her outfits are absolutely deranged. They decided to give her horns at some point and just like, that's what we're doing for the rest of the movie. You will have two nobules, like a giant battery on top of your head. And that's that. That's that.
Because she's Catwoman. It makes sense.
I feel like I have a few... Here's another thing where she's just explaining what's happened. This is before she has her transformation, where she's just making a note to herself. She is recording herself into a tape recorder, a la Norm Macdonald on Weekend Update. And she says, my research would proceed a lot faster if Dr. Woodward wasn't always whisking my samples to his Gilgamesh wing. That's a sentence that a person said.
In her like first appearance, like
she's got the wacky glasses, which is the Hollywood sign for nerd. And the Gilgamesh wing. We go over to the Gilgamesh wing eventually, and he's got a bunch of geopolitical bastards who are looking to buy super Maniacs. Soldiers that he is, that Dr. Woodward. Is it just Woodward?
Oh, I forget what it is.
And he's selling, you know, the super soldier serum to them. The demonstration doesn't go very well because he does turn this guy into Bane and he gets CGI'd into a big swollen mass and then immediately like starts throwing
Jason Woodrue.
Is that an actual character from Batman? All right. And he starts throwing Dr. Woodrue's henchmen. I love that everyone has henchmen in this movie. I love a good henchman. It's one of the things I liked about the Batman is that they found a way for the Riddler to have henchmen. It was just because he was a popular incel online. Works for me. Get you some henchmen.
I want a lair and I want some hench. You know? Hench people.
Hench people. Please, come on. It's 2024. Hench people. I mean, I don't know. I don't know. I'm just flailing here because this movie's just all over the place. She's in South America, but she decides to go to Gotham, I guess because Wayne Enterprises is there. And Wayne Enterprises had been sponsoring, which it feels like she would have known that without having to look at a beaker.
Yeah.
But had been giving Dr. Woodrue grants until it realized he was a psychopath.
I mean, it sounds like Wayne was right on this one.
You got to hand it to him. So Uncle Alfred, I was like, okay, I mean, people can have elderly uncles.
Sure.
And then it cuts to him looking at her mother's picture on the counter. And her mother is like fucking Lillian Gish. Like, it's just the oldest woman I've ever... Like, when did her mother have her? 87 years old? It's the most deranged thing I had ever seen.
Yeah, that
it was like a black and white photo, and like her eyebrows were tweezed to the max, like Vivian Leigh styled, like tweezed out eyebrows. There was no way this woman gave birth to presumably teenaged Alicia Silverstone.
I think it's just the same, like a very inconsistent version of how Gotham is like always in the 30s right. or 40s. Like it's that same sort of thing. Because that's when Batman
not as
started.
Well done as Tim no. Burton's version.
No,
of that.
And even then, it's like it's only confusing if you think about it too much. But this one, they drew attention to it, so you're like, "Well, wait, that's
how old is this woman?
This steel plate glamour shot is what the hell?
Oh, I can't put it directly in the sun. The silver in the photograph will be thrown off. It'll taint. It'll oxidize and it'll be ruined." She comes to Gotham City, Poison Ivy now,
yeah.
but she's in nerd drag. So she becomes Poison Ivy. She's vamping it up. She's all cool and, right. and queer adjacent. But then she sometimes gets into nerd drag to meet people, which I kind of liked. It was sort of a throwback to like Clark Kent, like a weird Clark Kent. She goes to meet with Bruce Wayne. She causes a commotion, which, as we all know, means that you get direct access to the most famous person
with all cameras trained on you
at the event. And then she just screams at him and gives him a proposal she has for some grant money research. And he says, oh, this would kill most life on Earth. And she's like, well, that's the price you pay. And he's like, you know what? Why don't you come to a gala we're having here? And I'm like, I love that these lines have nothing to do with each other.
There's a lot of just straight up exposition. Like, so as soon as, sorry, to go back to Alicia Silverstone, as soon as she shows up and then they like are walking her through the back and then they do like, she's like around the pool and she's like, both my parents were killed in an accident 5 years ago. Alfred's been taking care of me ever since. Why would you say that?
I love that line. That might be my favorite line. She says it so casually. When she starts saying it, I was like, oh, probably when she was a kid. That's why she's talking so casually. 5 years ago, your parents died 5 years ago. And you're just like, oh, yeah, this old thing, they died 5 years ago. Who cares? And then she says, oh, Alfred's been supporting me since then. I'm like, and he's never mentioned you and you've never come to this house whatsoever. No one's ever seen or heard of you before. Bruce Wayne's never met you over your entire 19 to 20 years of life, you've never been encountered or mentioned before.
Made
ever.
A phone call, written a letter,
sent Christmas presents. Nothing, Jeez. Barb.
My parents died 5 years ago. They were 105 and 107 years old, respectively.
So. Now, in the comics, she is Barbara Gordon. Is that correct?
Yes. I don't know if this is, I mean, it is, she, Batgirl, Barbara Gordon is right. Batgirl. So, I don't think this isn't supposed to be Barbara Gordon.
No. I was just curious because that's how I always know. That does remind me, this is actually something I think I originally hated, but I might kind of like in this movie, which is all the policemen are constantly in their formal uniforms that you would see like at a policeman's gala. They're always in like with the epaulets and the badges and the stars and the full hat, like the whole, like Commissioner Gordon, who in the first two movies is like always wearing a trench coat. And sometimes he's been to a gala, so he has a white scarf on, but otherwise just like normal guy. Now he's just always in his police formal uniform.
You want real policemen to do that.
I mean, it's, well, I'd love it if they were all wearing like white gloves all the time before they, you know, infringe on all of our constitutional rights. Just a little, I mean, I will say, I don't think this movie as art direction is as strong as like when Tim Burton was helming it, but it's still so like out of control that I kind of like it. I like that Gotham has like these zigzag bridges that are just going up level and like you will be level with skyscrapers as you're driving along I-45 in Gotham or something. It's absolutely insane. And then there's just giant statues of taut men holding observatories. Sometimes they're just like preening in the middle of town, the one that Mr. Freeze drives through and then drives down the arm. I'm like, do you understand this would be a feat of structural engineering not seen since the pharaohs of old? To have this giant statue, like you would have to have like slave labor building these things for 20 years
no
to build
Alfred
these things.
Can leave whenever he wants.
It was so deranged, but it was so deranged in a way that I was like, I like this. I think I like giant statues holding the, not just like the telescope of the observatory, they are holding the building of the observatory in their hands.
They took it.
I can't imagine what the handicap ramp looks like into that building.
Oh, that's not ADI.
Oh, don't
ADA
worry.
Compliant. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. OSHA can't come here. We told them there's another observatory down in the valley.
And then we attacked them with Joker's henchmen. But yeah, it's, I mean, they took this sort of aesthetic that Tim Burton sort of, I don't know, if, I mean, he wasn't necessarily the first, but we just saw this in Batman Returns as like, it's definitely already there. And then he just, you know, like many things, just blew it up till it was crazy, crazy.
And then added a bunch of like day glow lights on everything.
This is a cartoon, remember.
Don't worry, Joel, I'm way ahead of you.
I got a few quotes that aren't good, but are fun to say.
I just wanted to make sure I had all the nonsense.
Did you want to talk about Jesse, the body, the governor of Ventura?
He does have one of my quotes, which is, Freezy, you can't live outside the cold zone. Which is another line that is just explaining what's happening. It doesn't make any sense. But when Freeze is taken to Arkham Asylum initially, he is given a very special, pretty roomy cell that it is pretty roomy, but then you realize like how limited it is because there is a bed in the middle. And then there's sort of a chilling, I guess, cone of light that keeps it cold for him just over the bed.
He uses lasers, Damon.
The cold zone, as Jesse the Body Ventura said. Two governors in this movie, this and Predator.
Yeah.
Jesse Ventura, in his unmistakable drawl, says, Freezy, you can't live outside the cold zone, which I love. Just saying things, absolutely.
All first drafts. No repeats.
Don't need to go over it again. That's fine. Before we get to quotes, do you want to talk about, do you feel like we covered Arnold very well?
I mean, I don't have a lot more to say. I don't have anything more to say about it. I think he did what he needed to do for this movie. It's not like he's not a part of the problem, but he's not it's not his fault, again.
I was part of the problem. You're a huge part of the problem.
We need to talk about Coolio more. He was supposed to be, apparently, Scarecrow in future video movies, apparently. I don't know if that was like what someone told him or if that was actually in the works. But he was like, yeah.
We're not getting Billy Dee Williams as Two-Face. We're not getting Coolio as Scarecrow.
Yeah.
I do want to say one more thing. This, and she's not a great actress, but I still feel bad for the thankless job that Elle Macpherson was given, which was mostly standing next to George Clooney.
Yeah.
I don't even know her character's name. I know it is said at one point, but my brain was like, you don't need to store that. We're not storing that. It's such a shitty job she's given. She's just sort of there. There's no reason for her to be there. And she's given one sort of almost emotional scene. The closest this movie gets to having an actual emotive acting forward scene, which is her sort of laying her cards on the table, metaphorically, for Bruce Wayne and saying, look, what are we doing here? I want to get married. Do you want to get married? And the movie literally fades her out so that George Clooney can have a fantasy about Poison Ivy, ignoring his girlfriend's pleas for a determining the relationship conversation. He's like, you know what? I saw a woman who may have been a drag queen earlier today, a horticulturally themed drag queen. And I just want to ignore my girlfriend of a year while I think about her.
And she very obviously blew something into my face. And I'm the world's greatest detective.
Let me tell you something. As much as I appreciated, I would be fine if she blew the stuff into people's faces. Don't say that. Once every scene.
Yeah.
That's fine. It was like, it lasted for like 3 seconds. She kept having to go, every time she had to like get a response from them.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, I get it. They're under her spell. I'm not questioning the validity of this system. You don't have to keep saying, I know it seems unrealistic that the pheromones would last for the whole conversation. So I'll just do it every time she has to ask them a question.
That's the thing we thought would bring the movie down.
Not by the way, all this.
Everything.
But the pheromone dust that might be a bridge too far for some people.
Elle McPherson played Julie DTR Madison.
Julie, it's complicated, Madison.
This is not a cipher for George Clooney's real life relationships, Madison.
Oh, and I did the ending of the movie. So at the end of the movie, Poison Ivy kills or tries to kill Mr. Freeze's cryogenically swimming wife. Yeah. She unplugs her. Apparently, Bruce Wayne, we don't see this, but Bruce Wayne just tells us, oh yeah, she's cool. Don't worry about it. We saved her and she's A-okay, partner.
He's fine.
And so then
totally fine.
The governor, the future governor of California is like, blah, blah, blah. And so she attempted to kill his wife. So when they both end up in Arkham Asylum, Mr. Freeze is allowed to keep his giant suit, which again, runs on diamonds and is apparently allowed to beat the shit out of Poison Ivy. Keep in mind, Arkham Asylum, not a prison. It is a mental hospital for the Rogues Gallery of Gotham.
Look, you don't have time for me to discuss how underfunded the mental health system is in Gotham City. It's a problem.
It's a real shame that Wayne Enterprises just is putting more money into various themed vehicles than costumes. They are putting it into the mental hospital that houses the people that are terrorizing these people.
The tunnel system alone leaving the Batcave, which is bat themed, mm-hmm. That's at least 40 reformed villains worth.
We could get these guys reformed and out on the streets looking for jobs.
Use that money to give them jobs. Give Alfred some fucking
a jobs
help.
Program for Mr. Freeze. He will work in the snow cones place that he took over as his hideout. It seemed to be functioning. There was a whole vat of mint chocolate chip that Robin fell into.
That's true. Also, like Batman, have you learned nothing about pushing people into vats?
That's like half of your villains are people who fell into vats one day.
And I'm going to count Poison Ivy as pretty much falling into a vat. It was a bunch of chemicals.
Provided by Wayne Enterprises.
You might want to be careful. Otherwise, Robin becomes the mint chocolate chip monster.
That's how Nightwing started, actually. Okay, one more final thing. I do have a note here that says, why not just make the Batmobile seat 3? But then the toyetic notes under it answered my question.
Yeah.
Poison Ivy's finale, I wrote a note that said, curses is underused, which is her last word in her when she's still outside of Arkham Asylum. So let me set this scene really quick. She is in a giant plant. She's seated there. It is serving as her throne. When Robin comes in, pulling the old rubber lips fast one. And
they're rubber bat lips.
When the lips are bat lips? Or we're just branding? They're bat rubber lips, I feel like. Bat lips insinuates that they are from an actual bat.
Yeah, I guess they wouldn't be both rubber and from bats. That doesn't make sense.
So eventually, you know, then Batman comes to save Robin. And then, of course, Batgirl comes to save both of them. She fights Poison Ivy, gives us some Spice Girls era feminism to put her in her place. And then kicks her into that same plant. The very plant that she was sitting in.
She apparently controls.
Which incapacitates her, and then our three heroes just talk like, well, it's time to get Freeze. I don't know why I chose that voice. And she just goes, curses. When she lands in the plant, she knows, this is it. This is my undoing. This is my Achilles heel, the plant I was just sitting in. And it folds in on her Audrey 2 style, and she just sort of kicks, flails her available limbs. And that does her in.
I had that very note on my thing, and I don't understand.
What happened to throwing someone off a church like Jack Nicholson in the first one? You know what I mean? Am I that old fashioned?
Something. I thought the plants were your friends. I don't understand.
When do they shift back and forth? Like if, you know, up to the 15 mark of any hour, they're good. Then 15 to 30, they're bad. 30 to 45, good again. And it just sort of cycles around. You just got to keep an eye on your watch when you're going to use them as a throne.
I've said this once, I've said it a million times. Plants are wild animals, you know? You gotta watch out for them.
If I know anything about plants, it's that they're animals.
Plants, famously animals.
Plants, colon, animals, question mark?
A science? I'm just going to throw some... I didn't, like, keep track of all the stupid ice puns. We went over that, but I did. There was a lot of lines. This is a very, like, Emperor Palpatine return somehow. He's just talking about Mr. Freeze's situation. He goes, he falls in, like, a sub-zero chemical vat.
That he keeps without a railing behind him.
And then he goes, he survived somehow. And then blah, 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 blah. It's like, okay, all right.
Oh, he sure did. I already said, Freezy, you can't live outside the cold zone, which I appreciate. I like that Mr. Freeze has like a noble cause, which is to cure this terrible disease and reunite with his wife. But he also, come on, that's not a thumbs up. But he also is aware he's a villain and screams, kill the heroes to Batman and Robin at some point.
Kill the heroes.
Yes.
He knows he's a bastard. A lovable bastard.
All the best villains are villains of their own story.
Mm-hmm.
Wait. At some point, Bruce is talking to Alfred, and I don't even remember what it was. It was like, how do I get to trust someone, you know, when I'm blah, blah, blah. And then Alfred just goes, how indeed? Just the way he delivers it is so like, okay.
Are you going to tell us anything, Alfred? Do you have any words of wisdom? Are you just going to sort of cough up blood onto that suit of armor? Jesus. Here is actually one pun that I actually liked from Arnold Schwarzenegger, and it's one of his few non-ice puns.
Oh.
You clever little clover, he says to ice Pamela Isley, the third Isley brother.
But he says it not after she does anything clever. I did notice that. It was like,
I mean, their plan makes no sense. Their fucking plan. I know that everyone has said this. I read two reviews today. They both mentioned it. But I just feel the need to mention these of the two Batman villains, these are the two that would never work together because it doesn't make any sense. She wants the world to be covered in plants. He wants it to be completely absolute zero frozen. Guys, one of you has to compromise. That means if she if he freezes it and then they let the plants grow back, he has to be in his goddamn supersuit all the time. Or if he wins the compromise, no plants.
And it's like his whole plan doesn't make a lot of sense anyway. Like the only reason he went to freeze the world was because he thought his wife was dead. His original plan wasn't even to do that. It was just to get diamonds to keep powering his shit, right?
And then, well, yeah. I mean, to keep funding his...
He needed to kill Batman. You know, that was why he needed her.
And then...
I'm trying to help the movie a little bit here.
Yeah, I don't know. And I guess, I mean, and then fund his research in some way? The diamonds, he had to use them for his suit, so that's not part of it.
She could steal diamonds for him with her plants? I don't know. This is another weird George Clooney line delivery. This is the other one I was thinking of, where he says something about where she goes to school when he's talking to Barbara, to Batgirl. Uh-huh. And then she's like, how did you know that? And he's like, it says so on the patch on your sweater. Just like the way he says it, it's like, what?
I remember he's walking behind them. So they're walking like two by two, Alfred and Alicia in front, and then Batman and Robin, the titular characters, behind them. And they're just sort of like, George is constantly just like looking around. It says so on your sweater. He's the world's greatest detective. You probably forgot about that already. And wasn't there something else he observed? He did some sort of like deductive reasoning or some bullshit. Who cares?
Just don't point it at my bedroom, he says about the telescope observatory, which is like, no one was talking about that. And then they started talking.
No one brought up that you were fucking some woman, Julie Madison, presumably.
This was more of both the script thing and his line delivery, because she's like, you know, are you going to make her a lucky woman? Or are you guys going to get married, you know, get together? And he's like, marriage? Just like the coldest, weirdest delivery.
He's not good in this. I don't think I have. Oh, the first scene alone was just while they're just sort of watching the Batmobile like spin around on a lazy Susan. They're all just sort of staring at it while they bicker. And, you know, he says, Robin says, I want a car. Chicks dig the car. And then Batman says, this is why Superman works alone. And then he says something about food. And Alfred goes, I'll cancel the pizzas. Like, it's all so juvenile, and they have the cadence of a joke, but I'm like, what is this? Why are you doing this, movie? Why are you doing this to me, movie. And then Commissioner Gordon like shows up like Basil Exposition on the screen. Oh my God. I don't really have any more quotes.
Do you have any nominees? Do you have a Academy Memorial? I have a Sally Field Memorial single scene.
I didn't even think of any. Go ahead.
And that is the scientists who, during the final battle, are just hanging from the telescope in the observatory. And they've been like knocked off and they're just waiting, you know, hanging for dear life while Batman fights Mr. Freeze. And they're shouting things at him. And every time, at one point, Mr. Freeze just like punches Batman and they go, "Oh, dirty fighter, dirty fighter."
I do remember that. It was ludicrous because Batman is reorienting the telescope. He's like, "Y'all go down there." They're literally hanging for their lives off the cliff face. I mean, the telescope is sticking out of the building like an observatory. And that means they are hanging over this sheer cliff face. And they're just like, "Uh-huh." Well, they look at each other like cartoon characters and go, "Uh-huh." And then he saves them at one point. And he puts them on the cliff face.
Yeah. And they're like,
"Thank
you."
He puts them on a ledge and then shoots back up to the observatory. I'm like, "Take them to their offices, you jackass." And they're like, "Thanks, Batman." What a nice man, they might have said.
This is the realm that we're talking about. Of Sally Field forerunners.
Yes, that is terrible. I don't know if I can give Catherine O'Hara. I mean, even poor Michael Goh is...
I want it to go to John Glover.
I'll second it. John Glover gets the Catherine O'Hara. Hold on,
I'm not saying
write
that
it
this
down.
This is not a meaningful one, listener. So if you disagree with us...
Fuck it.
I mean...
John Glover.
All right, you want to go to the verdicts?
I want to say one more thing. Did you catch Senator Patrick Leahy in this? Senator Patrick Leahy, I want to say he's retired, but knowing our current Senate, he's probably not, is a huge Batman fan, and he is a party goer at the...
Oh, good for him.
When Poison Ivy sort of reveals herself in Gotham for the first time and blows that shit into the audience, and there's two guys bidding, there's a very tall, bald man behind them. And during a crowd scene, he's just sort of going like, this is terrible tape, but he's sort of going like this, "Whoa, whoa, whoa." And it's like, "I'm happy you're there, sir." He also is in The Dark Knight. He gets a knife in his throat or a knife in his mouth from the late Heath Ledger. He retired. How do you do it? Yes. He represented Vermont. He's the other senator from Vermont.
Oh, was.
Was. He was the other senator. Now he's no senator from Vermont.
Let's go to the verdict.
Shall we? Wig, wig, wig. Wait, what did you say your Sally Field was?
The scientist.
Good luck, Damon, getting a high-quality image of these two fuckers.
We could take a photo from...
Yeah, I'll have to like pull it up on Max and then like take a screenshot. Scientists at observatory.
Fuck. Dirty fighter, dirty fighter.
Yay, Batman! What a piece of shit.
Damon, what is your verdict?
This movie is a piece of shit, as I believe someone mentioned. This is not a good movie. In terms of kitschiness, there's a little in this that is kind of fun, but I feel like there's probably some elder millennial out there who has a really poorly maintained YouTube channel where you can get a compilation of all the best and or worst bits from Batman and Robin and have a much more enjoyable experience. It's not even a well-made movie. It is just sort of a group of scenes that are put together in arbitrary order. The acting is all over the place. The visuals are shitty. I don't even know who the audience is. Like, I'm fine with a Batman movie being aimed at kids, but this is a PG-13 movie. Like, who is the audience for this fucking thing? I don't know what else to say. It's not good. I didn't enjoy it. That being said, I think I like it more than Batman Forever because...
Wow.
I'll say this. If this is on TV, I will watch it. All the way through. In fact, one time I was watching it alone And my brother came home from the bars and he's like, what are you watching? I'm like, oh, it's the last 5 minutes from Batman Forever. But because it's TNT and it's the mid-2000s, they're playing it again right after this. And he sat down and I watched it again. So maybe I'm wrong. Maybe
Batman and Robin?
Batman and Robin. I watched Batman and Robin twice in a row. Get stoned and watch it if you want. Don't be of sound mind. But yeah, I cannot recommend this as a movie. Even in it's a bad, bad movie, to borrow the Flophouse's terminology. It is not a good, bad movie. Maybe it is a good, bad movie. No, I mean, this isn't a good movie, but I will watch it. It's an interesting curio from an age-long past. This is the best Batman movie they've ever done.
What is happening to your brain right now?
I don't know. I'm really, really on a knife's edge. I mean, there is something about this movie I enjoy watching, but it's not the quality of the movie. It's the opposite thing.
So, what's your verdict?
I mean,
I feel like we haven't actually sussed out what your friend.
I know. I'm genuinely thinking your inner child is. That's it. That's my verdict. No, your inner child is an. Your inner child is.
Oh my God. I've never seen you have this much trouble. Remember, no one really cares.
Your inner child is not an idiot. There's something about this movie I enjoy watching. I mean, it's like, it's a train wreck. I can't pull myself away. It is a complete failure in every way. And every time I watch it, I want to see how it fails. And it does it magnificently. There are movies out there that would wish they could fail as terribly as Batman and Robin did.
You remember how I said no one cares? You're fired from the podcast. Your inner child is an idiot. This movie sucks. Don't watch this. Don't listen to him.
I mean, I agree with you. Watch this. One, don't listen to me. Except for the podcast, then listen to me. Exclusively listen to me. But, and this movie sucks. I agree. But does that mean I don't want to watch this movie sometimes? No, it doesn't mean that. I'm torn in the same way like the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull tears me in twain. I recognize it as a bad movie that I will watch to the end every time I encounter it.
I don't know why. Lauren has this too, but there's a certain amount of like movie masochism that you guys have where you like want to be watching something that's actually bad. It like makes me upset. And I know that there are things that I actually think are good that other people are bad. So there is a large amount of subjectivity.
Well, that's not what we're talking about here. We're not talking about thinking that something is good.
No, we are talking about things that is pretty objectively poorly made, you know, but like as much as you can get there. With a movie.
I mean, there's something interesting about Joel Schumacher he hit it capitalistically out of the park with Batman Forever, and they just gave him the keys to the kingdom, and this is what he wanted to make.
That is
with probably slightly fewer toys, but they were going to give him a fifth Batman movie.
It's a cartoon, everyone. Actually, they didn't after because of how.
No,
this
I know. They
banned.
Were going to.
Whew. I was hoping to come to that sort of conclusion that I went because I did not like this from the jump when we were kids. I thought maybe there's some campiness that I would enjoy in it that I could like kind of come back to. And I did not enjoy
it. It fails even the camp test. Yes.
What do you think, everybody? Email us yourinnerchildisanidiot@gmail.com. Thanks for listening to our show. You can text us or leave us a voicemail 615-576-0525. We want to thank our friend Russ Weaver for her ad music. Top two. Thank you. We didn't do it. Did we do a problematic corner?
I mean, isn't the whole thing a problematic corner?
Yeah. R. Kelly's on the soundtrack.
You freeze. You're getting jittery.
Well, it's not on my end, so you're just calling attention to it. So,
wow. The whole thing is problematic. I mean, I talked about the 90s feminism. That's something. R. Kelly is on the soundtrack. That's a problem. Billy Corgan's also on the soundtrack. Not as problematic as R. Kelly, but fucking sucks, politically speaking. And what else? There's not a lot. I mean, I'm sure if I went back and tried to find it, I don't know if there's anything that like really, really rubbed me the wrong way in this. You? Are you remembering anything?
The whole thing with Alicia Silverstone, like around it.
The pan
not,
up the legs?
Not, like, in the movie, but the like the like.
Fat shaming.
That's gross. Don't do that.
I want to thank our patrons for supporting the show, and especially Little Miss Chicken Nugget. Thank you. Your support has made this episode possible. This is your request episode. I hope that you hated it as much as
I hope did. You enjoyed watching me completely unwind at the end of this.
Little Miss Chicken Nugget, your request broke Damon. So thank you very much, as well as, you want to take the next one?
Yes, just cause.
Lindsay Halleck.
Scalphosaurus.
Dramatically placed hot dog.
T. Smith.
His Honor, the Mayor of Gotham.
Ah, Jeremy Powlin.
Captain Jean-Luc Picard. That's my Poison Ivy.
Zachary Hartley, who I saw this movie with in 1997.
Oh, David Mort.
Dr. Malcolm Seaving, yes, Bosom. That's Arnold doing Jeff Goldblum. I just want you to know that.
Damon's Australian accent.
Lindsay Nell.
Caroline Amberson.
Bill Haynes.
Supreme ruler of this podcast.
Heather Toggle.
Beth Sermont.
Karen Curd.
Larissa Maestro.
I can't keep this up. It hurts my throat. Travis Vance.
James Taylor. Why don't you come on up and see me sometime?
The Zesty.
Josh Frigo.
Tommy Boy is my favorite movie. Arnold's favorite movie specifically. Not Damon's.
Shit on the cartouche.
The Hands of Fate.
Particle Man.
Jonathan Day.
Jackson has an unhealthy obsession with Damon.
The Elusive Fam Drunken.
Thank you all very much for supporting the show. If you want to support like them, patreon.com/yournerchildsanity. And don't forget to take our survey. Check the little click in the thing and you can get a we'll recap our 2023 episodes. You get that special episode after you fill out the survey.
You know, I just remember my favorite Arnold quote from this, and it's all his guttural sounds when he's in slight discomfort or pain, which is like, when he slips out of the cold zone, he's when he falls into the cryo tank, it's great. I love it.